always locked on heat. Biscayne, South Beach, Goldberg and Ramil, talking heat, body chill. Got the stats in the news, got the facts and the views. Never know what they gon' say. Mailbag on a Monday. Pat Riles got the pack ride. Coach Spo got the know-how. Three bands in the raps now. Heat Nation, that's a packed house. Heat talk at the game time. Heat talk every day. I'm always locked on heat. Got it locked on heat. Always locked on heat. Keep it locked on heat. Seat geek for the cheap. What's the day got the heat?
And now, your locked on heat hopes. Wes Goldberg and David Ramil.
All right, let's do this. Welcome to Locked On Heat, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your daily Miami Heat podcast. My name is Wes Goldberg. I'm here as always with David Ramil, and we are recapping the Miami Heat's 97-80 loss to the Golden State Warriors. Now, David, we usually start these things off with the big idea, but mostly, after our recaps, I've usually just been positive. You've been a little bit more negative. And so that was kind of where we were going. We were talking before we started recording. I'm like, oh, I'm kind of positive. And you're like, I'm kind of negative. So we're going to switch up from
I prefer realistic, though, to be honest.
Okay. Well, we're going to switch it up. We're going to switch it up from our big idea to the good, the bad, and the ugly. So let's start with the good, and I thought that the good was pretty obvious. It was Miami's defense, right?
Yeah, I mean, you look at the 17-point deficit, not much to really, you know, hang your hat on as far as the positive, but you're right. The defense, considering this is the Golden State Warriors with four All-Stars in their starting lineup, the fact that they were held to under 100 points, under 40% shooting for the night, that's absolutely a positive. Several key performances throughout the game, even some players who struggled offensively still able to contribute defensively. So that was definitely the positive thing. Look, I mean, Golden State shot 36.8%. That's got to be their worst shooting game of the entire season so far. Only 34.4% from three-point range, 11 of 32 overall. So I think Miami did a very good job of trying to switch and contain players. They did, the Warriors still did a great job of creating mismatches whenever those were available. They certainly found seams in Miami's defense, but overall, it was a pretty strong showing for Miami.
The first team all season to hold the Warriors to less than 100 points. That's something.
Yeah. It is something.
Look, you're right. There were several players who, even though Miami didn't play very well offensively, they played really well defensively. I thought Tyler Johnson. So I had to watch the Warriors announcing broadcast group, which you know that I already don't like. We've already talked. I hate the Warriors broadcasters. They're pompous. They're arrogant. They act surprised when another team even shows up on the court to play the Warriors, let alone make a good play. And they kept talking about Josh Richardson the whole night. Josh Richardson, I can't believe this defense that he's playing on Steph Curry, blah, blah, blah. Josh Richardson did play really well defensively, but I thought Tyler Johnson also played really well defensively, particularly on fighting through screens and over screens, which the Warriors set a lot of off the ball, and Tyler Johnson was game. He was ready to go, and he did a really good job. I thought Winslow did a really nice job defensively. James Johnson was just up for the task on both ends of the floor, and even Hassan Whiteside, who we're going to talk about in a second here, I thought he was decent in this at the start of the game defensively. I thought he kept Kevin Durant away from the rim on several occasions. He came out and played on the perimeter a few times, where, as we know, Eric Spoelstra wants him to do. So defensively, I thought that the Heat were obviously really good, but you can only hold off the Warriors for so long, and eventually they went on a couple of runs, and that was it. They were able to bust the game open. The bad was Miami's three-point shooting, and there's a few different things that you could point to here. They committed a bunch of turnovers. They had 20 turnovers in the game. They gave up a bunch of free throws. The Warriors were 22 of 24 from the line, and they only had four fast break points compared to 26 from the Warriors. So there was some of that, but really I thought that what did Miami in was that they only made 8 of their 26 three-pointers. They only made 8 three-pointers in the entire game, 30.8% from three-point range. That was the bad, right?
Absolutely. It wasn't even like they were taking highly contested shots. A few of those were pretty wide open. Wayne Ellington, the man with a golden arm, wasn't quite so golden, finished just 3 of 9 from three-point range. That's certainly not going to cut it. Okoro White, who started again in place of Deion Waiters, who's back home for the birth of his daughter. Congrats, Deion. Finished 0 of 2. Those were the only two field goal attempts. You know, he had been showing some promise. We got, I think, a mailbag question last week about Okoro being able to stroke the three-pointer consistently. That hasn't been the case, and he struggled again tonight. Josh Richardson, for all that he did defensively, just looked a little bit lost offensively. Finished, 3 of 7 overall and 0 of 3 from three-point range. That's not going to cut it. I think James Johnson actually wound up having Miami's best three-point shooting night, 3 of 7 overall. And I think a couple of those times, and I tweeted this, a couple of those were because they were at the end of the shot clock and he didn't have time to think through it. He's kind of had this confidence issue that you and I have both alluded to as being a problem with his shooting. Didn't seem like that was a problem when it was at the end of a shot clock. Had to hoist it there, and they look good consistently and in a nice form overall.
It's a problem when James Johnson is not only your team's leading three-point shooter, which would usually be fine, but he's also leading the team in assists.
Yeah.
And that's tough. That's a tough formula usually because, the player that's leading the team in assists is finding other guys for catch and shoot opportunities or something. James Johnson basically did it all offensively. Goran Dragic had a nice game too. But this team is a Heat team that's full of streaky shooters, and it's amazing how much better they look just when they're hitting 40% of their three-point shots versus 30%. And that was the difference tonight. And I've made this comparison a lot, but the Warriors are fortunate that they've got Curry and Klay Thompson. Even if they're not shooting well, and Durant, even if they're not shooting well in the first half, which they weren't, they're going to get it. They just have to hang in there for enough time before Curry and Klay Thompson eventually find their stroke. They are going to on a game-to-game basis. The Heat don't have that. Wayne Ellington could be cold for 3 straight games. You know what I mean? Like, that's not something that Curry and Klay Thompson does. Is it fair to compare Ellington and Miami's other shooters to 2 of the greatest three-point shooters of all time? Probably not, but it's an example of the Heat just don't really have that one guy that is always going to be able to score. There is no, in his prime, Dwayne Wade who's going to find a way to score. There is no LeBron James who's going to find his way to score. This is a team of streaky shooters. Quick reminder, make sure that you subscribe to the Locked On NBA channel. Brings you all 30 Locked On NBA podcasts into one easy-to-follow stream in your podcast app. Our recommendation, subscribe to Locked On Heat so you can get every episode automatically every day. Then subscribe to the Locked On NBA channel so that you can scout Miami's opponents, keep up with the most interesting storylines in the league, and also be sure to check out the NFL side like Locked On Dolphins, the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right. Before we move on, I want to continue on that three-point shooting thing because, obviously Golden State has had a pretty good defense over the last few seasons. Hasn't been the case so far early on. I know small sample size, et cetera. But it looked like they were a little bit more engaged defensively. So I'm wondering how much of that was Golden State's pressure defense and how much of it was just Miami failing to take advantage of open shots. Because, again, there were a few of those shots that should have fallen if they had had, more consistent shooting out there.
I think it's a combination of two things. I think, number one, Oracle's a tough place to play in. It is. It's an old-school arena. I think just it looks different for shooters. It's not – you don't have the same lighting and stuff. It's just like you've got this old-school kind of tomb feel to it. I've been in there several times. I think it's hard for shooters walking into that building. That's why Golden State has one of the best home court advantages in the league, because their best shooters know how to shoot there, and opponents walk in there, and it's a little weird. The other thing is that, look, Miami's on the second night of a back-to-back. They played really hard tonight. The one thing that really gets you on the second night of a back-to-back, your legs. And I think that you need your legs a lot in those three-point shots to get your lift and to get that consistency in your form, and I thought that was missing from Miami. Also, they don't have that many great three-point shooters, at least from a consistency standpoint. So all those three things combined, I think that was it. But you're absolutely right. There were several open shots that they probably should have made.
All right. Let's move on to the last. The ugliest, most glaring thing of the night, Hassan Whiteside. Again, you want to focus on the positives, and that there were moments there where he did look engaged defensively, was able to switch in a couple of guys, pull down some nice rebounds, five total in 16 minutes of play. Most of those, I think, came in the first quarter. But he just looks so, I don't know, detached. Like, I don't know quite how to describe it. Indifferent, apathetic.
Did he strike you did his frustration about just the rate at which the Warriors were trying to push the pace and just him not being able to keep up? Because he looked, at times, he was out of the game when he was even on the floor just because he couldn't keep up. And did that frustration lead to a detachment? Because that's what I got from it.
It's possible. I don't know. Like, even like, when he had one-on-one opportunities. I don't know. Only he knows, and I'm sure he's not going to admit it one way or the other. Spoelstra obviously recognized a little bit too late, unfortunately, that Whiteside was going to be a non-factor, and he had the quick hook at the start of the third quarter after just a few minutes of play. He said, enough is enough. He took him out of the game. I think he inserted Bam Adebayo at that point. Midway through the third quarter. Just because Whiteside was just completely disengaged, but there was a one-on-one opportunity against Draymond Green. Just didn't seem like he was willing. Look, I know Draymond's a horse, hard to back down, but Whiteside just didn't seem like he wanted to. Against Zaza, freaking Pachulia, didn't want to put in any kind of consistent effort. I mean, maybe he felt like he was getting fouled. Maybe he expended too much energy going up against DeAndre Jordan the day before. Again, you know, he's just getting his legs back after missing five games. We understand fatigue is going to be an issue, but it just seems so much more apparent with him. Like, it's one thing to be fatigued and give your all, but Whiteside just looked like he just didn't care, and that's been a problem for him all his career.
He was 1-9 from the field. His one shot that he made was the only good shot he took. It was the only good shot he took because he managed to somehow get a good post position, deep post position. And I think it was Goran Dragic that found him, and he managed to just flip it up and in. But all of his other shots, he'd get it, and we know what Whiteside does. He's a black hole offensively. He doesn't pass the ball, and he's got this tendency to just kind of flippantly put up a shot, and that's exactly what he did in this game. And you could do that against the Brooklyn Nets. You could do that against the Atlanta Hawks. You can't do it against the Warriors, where every possession counts. If you want to beat the Warriors, you know, if that's your goal in a game against the Warriors, every possession counts, because a flippant just chuck at the rim turns into a fast break transition opportunity for Golden State. Next thing you know, it's a 4-point swing. You know, so that really bothered me from Whiteside offensively. I mentioned earlier in the show, I thought I did a nice job defensively, but that Whiteside just, that's not enough to keep him engaged. And that's why I'm okay with giving him the post up here and there, because it keeps him engaged, at least defensively. But when he's doing that, that's why Spoelstra ends up yanking him just a couple of minutes into the third quarter. And he said after the game it was a coach's decision. The reporters asked him about it. He said it was a coach's decision. That was the decision. It was, you're playing like crap. I know Bam is going to come out here and not need the ball to play hard. And you're not, and I don't know what your problem is. So he benched him after just 16 minutes of play. Bam ended up playing 13 minutes. Kelly Olynyk played 18.
I mean, Adebayo out-rebounded him. In 13 minutes, he finished with 6 boards. I mean, and we know that Adebayo is going to show incredible athleticism, hops, and effort, but you expect more out of Whiteside. And you wonder, games like this really kind of highlight what his motivations are, none of which we're privy to. Like, it's one thing for him to joke about getting his NBA 2K rating up, or, you know, we make jokes about it because it's fun and entertaining, but at the same time you wonder about what his motivations are. He's gotten paid already. Is it big numbers? Well, he's not putting those up, really. I mean, he put him up against Orlando. He's had a couple good nights since then, but overall they haven't been great times. You know, and then is it all-star recognition? Well, it's games against the world champion Golden State Warriors where you need to make your mark. You can't make it against the Lakers or you know, the Atlanta Hawks or the other, you know, cellar-dwelling teams. It has to be against title contenders or at least playoff contenders where you make your mark. And tonight is one of those opportunities that he absolutely blew. Like, this could have been a moment for him to make a statement to the rest of the league on a night when there were only 3 games. Yep. In total, you know, across the league, one bad game with the Atlanta Hawks, and you know, the Phoenix Suns played against the Brooklyn Nets.
Yep.
And this was the
one night game
matchup.
Not to mention that Monday Night Football was crap, right? Because they had Aaron Rodgers, Green Bay Packers playing a Detroit Lions team that nobody's watched in a decade at least. Like, everybody, if you want to watch sports, this was the only thing to watch. You're absolutely right. Whiteside blew it. And that, what's crazy is that Whiteside oftentimes has a great game against the Warriors, and he just blew it. He blew it.
Yeah. Now, the Heat broadcast crew probably pointed out something.
I miss them so much.
Something that Jim Barnett and company did not point out probably, which is that Steve Kerr mentioned before the game that when it came to Whiteside, they were going to take a gang approach to limiting him. Hmm. Now, I know that everybody was trying to kind of get a body up on him and switch onto him and things like that, double teaming him. But those are things he faces normally. And it's one thing I understand to face a double team against, again, the Hawks, as opposed to Draymond Green and Kevin Durant and Zaza Pachulia beating you up. But it's still something that he could have done. I mean, he could have taken better advantage of those opportunities. There were still moments there where he was just one-on-one, and it didn't seem like it mattered. You know, he put up a weak floater over Pachulia that didn't fall through, a hook shot that he kind of flippantly tossed in towards the rim, and it's just like, no effort. He missed a lob dunk or a rebound putback. It's just...
Well, that's a dirty secret on Whiteside. If you challenge him like that, the Warriors, obviously, they're going to attack him with a gang mentality. The dirty secret about Whiteside is that he doesn't pass it in those situations. He either holds onto the ball and puts up a shot, or just puts up the shot immediately because he doesn't want to deal with it anymore. And those are the two options with Whiteside. He doesn't pass the ball. I honestly don't know why every team, and we've seen this, we've seen the league in general do this for a few games at a time, where they recognize that Whiteside is in one of these funks and they just crash him every time he's got the ball because he doesn't pass out of it. And you would think the obvious thing that any middle school NBA player, middle school basketball player would do is, if you get triple teamed, find an open teammate, because you've probably got two open teammates at that point. Whiteside doesn't do it, I guess because he's 7'1", that he feels like he just get any shot he wants. I don't know what it is, but it's frustrating. That's what it is. All right, spotlight players. Let's talk about something positive. I can't talk about Whiteside anymore. Goran Dragic was your spotlight player.
Look, you know, going up against Steph Curry, Curry didn't have the best game of his career, obviously. Finished with just 16 points, 5 of 19 shooting overall in 34 minutes. He's probably indifferent. For all that we talk about LeBron, the Cavaliers not really caring until March or April or even later. The Warriors don't have any reason to be fully engaged at this point either. So, I mean, you're not going to get the best out of Curry. And it wasn't a great shooting night for him. But Goran Dragic really took that challenge head on. And there were moments there where it really seemed like he was the only player who was giving 100%. You know, that it's not going to be a great night anyway, because it's only Goran Dragic, and he's not the kind of player that can score 40 points on a given night. That has nothing to do with it. He gives maximum effort, finished with a really nice 19 points on 8 of 18 shooting. Only got to the free throw line four times, converting two of them, so that's unfortunate. And did finish, like you pointed out, with less assists than James Johnson, only 4 to Johnson's 6. So not a great night for him. But I can't help but say what a tremendous effort from him. And it just seemed like when Miami did cut the lead to 10, I think at the end of the third quarter, it was at the end of the third quarter, pushing the end of the third quarter, a 20-point lead or more, I think. I'm not sure at this point. It was a 20-point lead. It was a 10-0 run.
20-point lead, and then the Heat went on a 10-0 run, yep.
Yeah, and he was in there engaged, working with everybody, dishing the ball well, and just infusing energy that seemed to be gone with Whiteside's lifeless, huge body out there. His bloated corpse taking up space and drawing out energy. He was like an energy sponge. They take him out of the game, put Adebayo in, and all of a sudden there's this incredible energy, and all of a sudden Dragic has much more space to operate and just seem much more comfortable. And I just loved his performance. I mean, again, on a night when you've got Steph Curry, he outscored Steph Curry. Curry is the best point guard in the league without a doubt. But, Dragic doesn't get nearly enough respect, I think, across the league, and this was a good showing from him.
Yeah, you tweeted at one point that you were saying maybe games like this, on a platform like this, people will start recognizing how good of a player Dragic really is. And you're right. We've talked about that 100 times on this show. Really quick, introducing LockedOnHeat.com. That's right. We've got a website now. The guys that make your favorite podcast now have a site to write about the team. We'll have news, commentary, and analysis throughout the season. David and I, we are writers at heart, and so we're beyond excited to bring you this site, LockedOnHeat.com. Bookmark it, save it, whatever you got to do. Make sure that you're visiting LockedOnHeat.com. My spotlight player is James Johnson. 21 points, yeah. 9 rebounds, 6 assists, 3 steals, a block, 2 turnovers in the game. So that was good, right, for a team that commits 20 turnovers. He was phenomenal. I mean, he was on a team that had some guys that came up big defensively, other guys, not really a lot of guys, but a couple guys that did some nice things offensively. Dragic, like you mentioned, Kelly Olynyk was pretty good offensively. James Johnson was the only one that did it on both ends tonight. From start to finish, he was the only one that did it on both ends. He was the best player on the floor for Miami. Oftentimes, he was the best player on the floor in the game. He was the guy that was defending Durant or Draymond Green on one end, depending on the lineups and rotations. Offensively, I noticed in the first half specifically, Dion Waiters obviously out because there's a new resident to Waiters Island. What the Heat did after James Johnson subbed in for O'Carroll White is they put the ball in James Johnson's hands to basically run the offense, the point forward that he's been labeled with. He was that because that got Dragic off the ball a little bit more, and when you don't have as many creators because Waiters is out, that's what the Heat did. And Spoelstra said, I know that the Warriors are probably the best defensive team in the league when they want to be, but I'm still giving you the ball. And I'm still letting you run this offense. We need Dragic to shooting off the ball, probably was the idea. And I thought that was really creative by Eric Spoelstra. He thought that was a mismatch, and it kind of forced the Warriors to rejigger their rotations a little bit. And that was a good way to get them off balance a little bit in at the start of the game. And then just James Johnson, he got it. He found that 3-point stroke, 3 of 7 from that range. He's in the last several games, I've noticed he's found that above the break three, which I don't know the numbers, but the eye test tells me he actually shoots the above the break three better than the corner three. I think that's his sweet spot, right just beyond the elbow.
That was the case last year.
Yeah, absolutely.
Case last year.
And so he's kind of refound that, where we know James Johnson through the preseason and the start of the regular season was struggling with that 3-point shot, and I think he's refound that above the break three that he likes, that sweet spot that he has. He was tremendous, and defensively, you can't say enough about what he did. He was just able to guard multiple positions and switch, and he was, like I said, Miami's best player tonight.
Yeah, I mean, look, I'll still, for the sake of you know, full disclosure, I'm still concerned about some of the things James is doing out there. Like, he seems to overhandle in some cases. Like, I don't know, I'm not sure if the dribble just goes a little too high or gets away from him. You know, he's a little too careless sometimes when he goes
into
that spin.
Oh, you saw that against that final possession of the game against the Clippers.
Yes.
You're absolutely right.
Yes. Yeah, and then his passing sometimes can be a little too fancy as well. Like, he's just trying to do a little bit too much, threading the needle when there isn't any space there. But he did still finish with, you know, 9 rebounds, 6 assists, and a great overall night. On a night when not a lot of players stepped up, you can't put the blame on Johnson, that's for sure.
There was a point when the Heat were down by 12 and James Johnson was still a plus 10 in the box score. That is insane. Yeah. I've never seen that happen before for a guy that ended up playing 32 minutes. All right, I did want to call out, those were our spotlights, but I did want to call out really quickly Josh Richardson. His defense was phenomenal. Like I said, Jim Barnett and Fitz, whatever his name is, the guy I can't stand, the play-by-play guy for the Warriors, they just kept raving about Josh Richardson. Nate Duncan, who does the Dunked On Basketball podcast, he tweeted, Josh Richardson, and he's credentialed for the Warriors, he does a bunch of Warriors coverage, Josh Richardson has had one of the best defensive games I've ever seen from a guard against these Warriors. That's pretty good praise, right? So... Josh Richardson's defense just against Klay Thompson and all that was phenomenal. I thought he just really played well on that end.
Yeah, I mean, the switchability, the length, everything else that you expect from Johnson. You know, Tony Fiorentino actually used your word disruptive to describe his defense. So.
Really?
Absolutely. I think he's done it on a couple of occasions, to be honest with you.
Did I say that? I know I didn't steal that from Tony. I'm positive about that, but...
You mentioned it, I think, in our season preview when you were your superlative for Richardson was disruptive.
I was going to say, did I mention it in our podcast with Alana? because he might have listened to the Alana pod.
Is she snitching? Is she snitching to Fiorentino? Is that what it is?
No,
I think he's just listening.
Alana retweeted it, and because Tony follows her on Twitter, he might have listened to our show. And I'm wondering if I got to go back and listen to that and see if I called Josh Richardson disruptive. In that show. Tony, he tweeted at Alana again this last week.
Did he?
She's got a fan, I'm telling you. We gotta leverage that.
He's gonna have a lot of free time on his hands next year, so maybe he can listen to this podcast.
All right. So that's everything. Any notes? Any loose ends that you want to tie up? I thought we were gonna see a little bit more Derek Walton Jr., but he came in at like the last minute of the game. That was about it. I was a little disappointed with that.
You know, I wish that Spoelstra had been a little less rigid. Maybe not started Okara White. I guess he was trying to recreate something there. But
is that done? Are we done with that? If James Johnson keeps playing like this, I think we're done with it.
You know, you mentioned that you think Johnson should start. I think that's, I mean, obviously a very strong case because he's so productive, at least until the return of Deion Waiters, right? If Deion comes back,
yeah,
then I guess
still think you start him. What, I get that Okara White's playing like the Luke Babbitt reprise. I get it. But 8 minutes in a game? Like, even Luke Babbitt played 15, 16. He played twice that. Like, what is the point?
He can't contain Durant. I mean, that was clearly a problem, you know?
I don't know. Like,
I think Johnson's the only guy who can match.
Just play your best players.
You know,
the Heat, they're 4-6 right now. Just play James. Like, what is the worst case scenario if you just start James Johnson? Just start him.
Well,
why is he getting, like, why is he being so fancy about this? And Bam, okay, Bam, by the way, has earned more minutes. You start James Johnson.
That's what I'm saying. Why not Bam starting instead of James Johnson?
Oh, Bam next to Whiteside?
Yeah.
Fine.
Killing spacing? Does that kill spacing?
I don't care. What's the difference at this point?
What, are you tanking the season already?
No,
are we done?
No.
10 games in the season?
Well, actually, maybe if Bam was playing power forward next to Whiteside, he'd actually show off that jumper that we know he has. That he hasn't. Tonight was supposedly the first night he scored on a non-dunk. First time.
That was a layup.
That was a layup from right underneath the rim, right? But it was not a dunk. It's a finger roll. No, I think you start James Johnson and you just give Bam more minutes because now you're giving less front court minutes to Okara White, so I think you could give Bam more minutes. Hey, hell, give Whiteside less minutes. I think if Hassan comes out slow again, you just yank him. I'm not scared to play Whiteside less than 20 minutes. I'm fine with that.
You know, you're walking up thin ice there, I think. You don't want to have, like, Spoelstra has been very direct. I think in the past he hasn't been afraid of giving Whiteside the hook if he's deserving of it.
Yeah.
But you can upset team chemistry pretty quickly for a guy
pull an Adam Gase and trade him.
Well, there's not going to be a lot of takers for a guy with that attitude, I think. Even with all of his ability, I just don't think Whiteside's a very popular guy around the league, to be honest with you.
He's not a popular guy with Heat fans right now either. I mean, and he was not a popular guy with the coaching staff tonight. I don't know. He can't have these. And we've heard the team talk. You can't just be a max player and have a night like this where you're just disinterested. I don't care if it's the second night of a back-to-back. Everybody else came out and played hard. The Heat played really hard tonight. I mean, if I'm gonna play my character for this season so far and be the optimist, the forever optimist, they played so hard tonight against the best team in the NBA on the second night of a really tough back to back. They played really hard. Like, I was really impressed with the effort.
I hear you. That is a positive, but it does feel a little reminiscent of the start of last season when all we kept talking about was the effort being there and nothing else to show for it. So, but there's hope on the horizon. A really bad Phoenix Sun team that kind of resurged lately. I guess after firing their head coach, Earl Watson, they kind of look a little bit more engaged. But at the same time, they're still not particularly deep, not particularly good. Eric Bledsoe, their best player, isn't welcome there on the team anymore after a mistimed tweet. They've got Tyson Chandler, former Dallas Maverick. For our Heat listeners, Dallas, he won a championship obviously with the Mavericks, and he's there now. I wonder how Whiteside responds. There's also noted nemesis Alex Len there. A guy who got into a scuffle with him. So I'm curious to see how Whiteside responds after tonight going up against a noted rim protector like Chandler, although he's a little bit older.
I won't even be impressed if Whiteside plays well. He's going from playing like garbage against the best team in the NBA to, in what, he's going to have a good game against the worst team in the NBA? I don't care. I don't even care. I mean, it's better than having another bad game. He needs to bounce back regardless, so I suppose you're right. Yeah, another thing to watch, a guy that a lot of Heat fans wish that the Heat took instead of Justice Winslow, Devin Booker.
Oh, that guy.
That guy, which I still, Winslow is the right pick, and Winslow right now is still a better player. But I think I would love to see Winslow against Devin Booker. And we're going to see it the Heat switch everything. So that's what I'm looking forward to. Just right now, just off the top of my head without kind of diving in.
Do you really think that Winslow's still the better choice?
Yeah.
You're kidding me, right? Are you saying this just to ingratiate yourself to the listener?
No, I'm not playing a character. I'm serious. I think that this is I like Justice Winslow more than Devin Booker.
Who cares that you like him? I like him too.
I like him more as a player. He's a better player. I'd rather have if I'm in a game of pickup and you get West, who's your next pick? It's between Devin Booker and Justice Winslow. I'm taking Winslow. He just does more. Oh, Booker just shoots a lot. Who cares? Booker just shoots a bunch. Okay. I don't care.
That's what we need. We've got it.
You just had a child. Well, Deion Waiters will come back and we'll be fine. I want Winslow. Winslow does so many other things that just Devin Booker does. And I really like Devin Booker a lot. I was a big fan of his.
If you could have taken Booker in the first round and still taken Richardson in the second one, that would be a pretty goddamn potent lineup there, I think. You'd never have to have overpaid for Deion Waiters. You still would have had a much younger team with a much younger upside, I think.
It's not by much. I'm not saying it's hands down. I'm just saying, like, I really like Justice Winslow's potential here. I think in 5 years, it wouldn't surprise me at all if Justice Winslow was a much better player than Devin Booker.
Oh, you're the only person to feel that way.
All right. Be out here on my Winslow Island all by myself. All right.
Okay. Enjoy yourself.
That's all we have for today. Thank you for listening. You can send mailbag questions. We're going to do our mailbag, by the way, for Wednesday. So it'll be our Wednesday morning, right? No. Yes.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Yeah, it'll be later this week. We're going to have a mailbag later this week after the Suns game. No, we play the Suns Wednesday, so we're going to play. We're doing a mailbag for Wednesday morning, yeah. So send your mailbag questions, and we need a few more of those now that the Warriors game is over. So send those to lockedonheat@gmail.com. You can tweet your questions and comments for our recaps using the hashtag AskLOHeat. Make sure to subscribe to the show, get podcasts automatically every day, then go to iTunes, rate us, review us, say nice things about us. Theme song is by CeeLo Keys. Outro music is courtesy of Mojave Wild. We'll catch you next time. Thanks for joining me, David.
You got it, brother.